I'm Emma Greed, host of Aspire with Emma Greed, a podcast where I sit down with people who don't just dream big, they build big. From culture-shaping voices like Mel Robbins to leaders redefining success like Tracy Ellis Ross to game-changing entrepreneurs like Mark Cuban, Aspire is about mindset, ambition, and doing the work that actually moves the needle. If you're ready to raise your standards and take charge about the life and career you're building, Aspire is where you start. Follow and listen to Aspire with me, Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast available wherever you get your podcasts.
So if you are targeting Nancy Guthrie, are you going to park your very identifiable car in front of her house?
Are you going to walk up with your very identifiable goatee and probably pinky ring up to the front ring doorbell camera?
Wear a ski mask.
The whole thing is so weird.
This is a true crime and real-time update from Odyssey's On Deadline podcast. We dive into true crime stories reported by Odyssey newsrooms across the country. And you just heard Dana Wright and Scott Parks of The Dana and Parks Show out of Odyssey station KMBZ in Kansas City. They were discussing the ongoing investigation into the disappearance of Today Show host Savannah Guthrie's 84-year-old mother, Nancy. Nancy was last seen on February 1st. In this episode, we'll explore the latest developments in the case. We'll also check in with WWJ News Radio's coverage of the attack on a Michigan synagogue this week that resulted only in the death of the perpetrator. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer noted that law enforcement prevented what could have been another school massacre. How did they do it? From there, we'll go to WBEN in Buffalo, New York, for the latest on the Topps grocery store mass shooting case as it winds through the court system. To end the show, we'll also take a look at coverage from Henry Lake of WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities and the Dave Glover Show out of KMOX in St. Louis about a prank that turned deadly. But now, let's go back to Dana and Parks' discussion of the Guthrie case.
According to sources, additional images have been recovered from the cameras at Nancy Guthrie's home. Okay?
Just now?
The FBI has recovered additional imagery from cameras at the Arizona home of Nancy Guthrie. The images were recovered in recent weeks from the motion-activated cameras trained on the backyard, the side yard, the swimming pool, and, according to Fox News, the front yard. Okay?
All right.
Investigators were unable to recover video footage, but reduced-size thumbnail images captured whenever the cameras were triggered by motion. According to the source, the cameras recorded nothing suspicious. Investigators were able to observe several people in the back and side yards over an unspecified period of time prior to the abduction. However, the cameras captured nothing on the night of the abduction and picked up again only when police were looking around after 911 had been called in the side yard. Investigators have drawn no conclusions as to why, but one source describes that as odd. So you mean to tell me one guy, just one guy, goes in that house, takes her out of there, goes in the front, only comes out the front with no help, back, side, otherwise, and never cased it on the back or the side or otherwise. And there's not a single image showing anyone else.
Why
that is weird.
Why would you need to case it if you're only going in and out of the front door?
Why would you go in and out of the front door, period? Where the most recognizable immediate ring doorbell camera greeted him.
Yeah. I don't know. Here's what I do know. I do watch the Today Show. I switched from Good Morning America to the Today Show because God love him, Michael Strahan cannot read well, and it drives me crazy.
I love Michael Strahan.
I like him as a character, like when he's on the football programs on Sundays, but the man cannot read a teleprompter, and it drives me insane. So I switched over to the Today Show a couple of years ago. And have become quite a fan. Every day they, you know, the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin. And then every morning Craig Melvin has to say, you know, Hoda Kotb is filling in for Savannah while she's with her family. I don't know how, and I know she has announced that she is coming back. Obviously, she hasn't yet. And I don't know how you can do that, at least not in the short term.
And then how long do they keep covering it? Listen to this from Matt Finn with Fox News. A law enforcement official close to the case tells Fox that new photos have been recovered from all three cameras. He reports that includes the driveway, the backyard, and the front door camera. The driveway. Fox is told the images did not show anything suspicious, but did show people and cars. Did he not have a car?
Well, if he did, and I'm assuming he did.
She had a driveway camera, and you're telling me there's nothing suspicious on those cameras.
Well, he's not going to park it in front of the house.
So to be clear, we have no update.
I was just going to go there. Thank you, Sam.
We have nothing.
The update on the story is we got nothing.
The update is they have all the images from the three different cameras that show nothing. Of itself is insanity. It should have picked up something. And then there's just this blank space, and then it picks up again when police are there.
But I need you to put yourself in the mind of a criminal, okay? One who's not dumb.
Okay.
Okay. And so somebody who has planned this out. Even the sheriff says this week this was targeted.
Yep. Yes, targeted.
So if you are targeting Nancy Guthrie, are you going to park your very identifiable car in front of her house?
Are you going to walk up with your very identifiable goatee and probably pinky ring up to the front ring doorbell camera?
Wear a ski mask.
The whole thing is so weird.
This scares me for a completely different reason. Because this tells me that even if you don't have a subscription, Ring is storing your data.
Mm-hmm.
People who come to your door, people who leave your house.
Right, it's usually the mailman. Mm-hmm. Why do they have the data except then there's no data and then police just show up?
Hold on. Why does that concern you?
Because we are welcoming a surveillance state that we don't even know the depth of.
No.
That didn't even work in this case, Sam.
You have put that on your house.
That's what I said. We're welcoming it.
Okay.
It creeps me out. As a Ring camera user, and we have the sensors inside our house and the sensors on our windows.
Okay, so is it a complete false sense of security then?
It's weird.
Because we have cameras everywhere. And it's like, so did she. And she probably thought, ain't nobody going to come in here.
She didn't have a subscription. She wasn't paying for the service. And I
went and sought out services and subscribed after this happened. If there's a subscription, I bought it.
I know that I will be switching as soon as I can afford the camera package to the in-home system that is not connected to Ring or Amazon or whatever.
We have exterior service. We don't have interior service. But I also have guns. So if I'm in the house and you break in, we have two people and three guns. I'm coming double blazing. And so that doesn't concern me that we don't have interior cameras. But we do have exterior ones. And so does everybody on the block.
So did everybody on her block, Scott.
Yeah, but her block was not lit. Lights were not allowed. Street lights were...
I'm putting up floodlights if I live in Tucson right now.
I don't think that's legal.
I know. They're not supposed to be able to do it.
No.
Look at that, where that's got us.
Well.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
In an interview released Friday by NBC News, Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos said that his office is still working to identify the masked man seen at Nancy Guthrie's home. He also said investigators now have a theory for a motive for the alleged kidnapping, and that they believe that the Guthrie case was, quote, targeted. Another crime described as targeted this week was the attack on Temple Israel in the Detroit area on Thursday, March 12th. A man identified by federal officials as 41-year-old Ayman Mohammed Ghazali, a naturalized U.S. citizen born in Lebanon, reportedly drove his truck into the synagogue. He died during the attack,
but no students, teachers, or staff were killed during the incident. Here's Jennifer Runyon, the FBI special agent in charge at the Detroit field office leading the investigation, discussing the case during a Thursday press conference covered by Odyssey station WWJ News Radio.
This is a deeply disturbing and tragic incident, and our deepest sympathies are with the victims, their family, and the entire Jewish community. The FBI is here working with our state, local, and federal partners to investigate this incident, and I confirm that we are leading the investigation right now as a targeted act of violence against the Jewish community. As my partners have said, this is an active and ongoing investigation with an active crime scene, and I ask for your patience as we process this evidence and pursue every lead that has come to us and that we have developed thus far. What I can share is this. There was one subject involved in this incident who is now deceased. And as my partners have said, we've had no victim fatalities. I would not be able to provide additional information at this time on the subject or his motive, as our goal is to protect the integrity of this investigation and to ensure that we give you accurate and timely information as soon as we can. The FBI was notified of active shooter at Temple Israel at approximately 12:45. We immediately activated and deployed all of our crisis response resources, which includes our SWAT team, our crisis negotiation team, our evidence response team, our special agent bomb techs, our weapons of mass destruction team, our cellular analysis survey team, and our victim services, as well as more than 100 agents and analysts to ensure that we are actively mitigating and responding to the active threat, but also pursuing diligently and methodically every lead that we have. My ask to the public is a few things. I know everyone wants information now, but I ask that you be patient as we are still processing this scene and still pursuing everything that we can and that has come to us today. Second, we've activated a digital media tip line for any witnesses who has photos or videos of the incident today. They can upload those at www.fbi.gov/West Bloomfield attack, all one word. But the public can also report through our call line at 1-800-CALL-FBI if you have any information about this incident and or any other suspicious activity that you see around in your community, your life, your places of worship, your schools. As the sheriff said, we all need to remain vigilant, and it takes the whole community to ensure that we remain safe.
Ghazali was a restaurant manager per the Detroit Free Press. CBS News reported Friday that he had recently learned of the death of his two brothers and two of their children in an Israeli airstrike in Lebanon, citing a source from the Lebanese American community in Michigan. In addition to the war in Gaza that began in October 2023, the U.S. and Israel recently began strikes on Iran. Airstrikes have been raining across the Middle East, claiming lives on all sides of these battles. According to CBS's source, Ghazali called his ex-wife and told her to take care of their children shortly before the attack, something that alarmed her. The source said that his ex-wife then contacted police and relatives to check on him. Here's Steve Smith, a witness who saw the attack on Temple Israel, describing it to WWJ's Amanda Forrester.
Okay, right now, there are police outside every entrance. They just brought in several dogs. Tactical's been in there. They've got some of the officers have gas masks on. I don't know. There's still smoke coming out of the inside of the school. So I think they're searching for somebody. Sorry, I was sitting here for the food pantry, and I was about 10 cars back in a grayish, darker, like a smoke-colored pickup truck pulled into a little half circle where everybody picks their food up later, and then came back out of it, went down to door number 5, cut across the grass, backed up, and gunned it and slammed into school. And I think they're still evacuating people if they can find them.
And what have you heard from police?
Not a thing from police other than everybody back up.
And what time was this?
12:30.
And have you guys seen anybody coming out that appears to be injured, or is it just
no? They've evacuated a few of the staff and popped them in vehicles and drove them off down to the end of the parking lot. Fire department's here, medical squad's here. Officers are standing, like I said, on all the doors that I can see.
And is there anything I haven't thought to ask you? I know this is kind of like an unfolding situation, but is there anything at this time that I haven't asked you that you want to make sure that our listeners know as of right now?
Not much. I'm the one. I don't know if anybody else did, but I did call 911 as soon as I saw him slam into the building. He went right in the doors. So I don't know how far he went down, but the smoke seems to be coming from probably 30 foot inside the school.
Yeah.
I just heard some kind of boom.
Oh.
That's the second time I've heard a boom. The other one was about 15 minutes ago.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.
Oakland County Executive David Coulter also joined WWJ to explain how his team at the Oakland County Emergency Operations Center monitored the situation.
Well, I was horrified. You know, it breaks my heart. And this is the third situation like this since I've been executive, if you think about Oxford High School and then the water park and Rochester Hills. So it just breaks my heart that this is where we are as a country. But I'm proud of the fact that our team has responded. I'm at our emergency operations center right now. We're coordinating all the response to this, and they're doing an amazing job, and we're doing everything we can to keep the synagogue and the people there in the community safe.
At this point, how does the Oakland County community support West Bloomfield in the wake of this?
Well, the immediate thing is to stay away from the area, which I'm sure the sheriff has said. It's still an active scene, and there's still a lot of things going on there. Prayers are always helpful. I'm a person of prayer myself, so I think that's a wonderful thing to do. But look, we're responding in all sorts of different ways. The children that were at school in the synagogue have now been moved off site. We're going to provide mental health counselors. We actually provided parks buses to get them there. I mean, we spare no effort to try to figure out exactly how we can assist them. But right now, there'll be more details on what folks can do to help, especially as we know the extent of any possible injuries, which there's no confirmation of serious injuries at this point, which is very fortunate, unlike some of the other incidents that we've had. So that's the good news. I should also add, I've been in contact with, you know, our governor and our both of our senators, our Congresswoman Stevens from here, and they've all, you know, just pledged the state and federal support that we need. And so I'm grateful for them.
The response from Oakland County and from police departments all throughout the county, exceptional. The time they took to get there, almost no time at all. And you had to be pleased with what you saw there.
Very much so. First, starting with the Bloomfield police, who were on the scene right away, leading the investigation. But then again, yes, the Sheriff's Department, numerous police departments from across the area have come there, Michigan State Police. I mean, these folks, and, you know, unfortunately, this is the third time I've watched them in operation. But I want people to know just how confident and they can be and proud of the response, our first responders.
Former Detroit Violent Crimes Task Force Lieutenant Tom Berry explain to WWJ's Tony Ortiz what exactly law enforcement will be doing as the investigation moves forward.
What's going on now at the scene now that the suspect is dead?
Well, what they're doing now is obviously the violent crime FBI is on the way there. They haven't taken over the the investigation right now is Oakland County, but if it's a terrorist that did this, that's dead, then they will take over the investigation. They'll track it back. You know, has he been, you know, listening online to rhetoric and brainwashing? Is that why he did it or didn't do it? That's what they'll be looking at. Is there anybody else involved? So they'll go through his computer. They'll go through his phone and check that out once they identify him. I'm sure they already got him identified. But the officers that were out there, I want to say this personally, they're all retired officers. They know what they're doing. They train for this, just like Oakland County does. They're ready for things like this. They don't want it to happen, but that's what they do with all the, you know, anti-Semitic things that's been going on in the world in the past couple weeks. They're ready for it. They train for it. They know what they're doing, and I'm very proud of them, and it looks like they know exactly what they're doing. They neutralized the shooter. They got the kids out of there. I believe it's a daycare out there.
Yes.
And nobody else was injured. It's just it's a sad situation for the man and the man's family. But other than that, you know, nobody else appears to have been hurt. Nobody was injured, and it worked. So training does work. They came together. They worked together, and they neutralized the shooter, in my opinion.
Tom, I'm kind of curious. How do authorities now go about investigating a motive in these type of attacks?
What they do is they'll start with him. I believe it's a man. I'm saying it's a man. And they'll start with him, check his background. They'll go through all his social media, his phone. They'll be executing search warrants wherever he lives. So that you expect right now that they're already getting that done. They're probably on the way to his house or apartment or where he lives right now. To search that, they can find other clues. Why did he do this? Was he, you know, was he ill? Was he sick? Was he anti-Semitic? Was he involved in the political rhetoric that happens in this? And all too often, that's what it seems to be. They get that thing in their head, and they're a little bit off. And it's just the way it is, and they snap. They just snap. Now, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And unfortunately, that appears to what happened here. I don't know that. I'm just giving you my opinion. But he snapped, and he went there, and he had a mission, and he completed his mission.
Security at Jewish and other religious organizations has been increased in the wake of this attack. How much can organizations do to prevent these type of attacks?
You can't prevent crime. You can't prevent terrorism. You can slow it down. You can, you know, make them think about it. But if somebody is, you know, has that in their mind and they want to do what they're going to do, it's unfortunate, but we can't stop it all. You can't stop and I call them a crazy person. You know, they've lost their mind. They've snapped. It's hard to stop them. So all we can do in law enforcement is what we do every day, and especially Oakland County. They're all over this, along with the former officers that unfortunately had to shoot the man. They train for this. And when you train over and over and over, when something like this happens, I'll tell you, we've been involved in that. It clicks. It just clicks in, and you just do it. And, you know, a half hour later, you know, you get together and go, wow, what did that happen? Well, you train for it. It's like, you know, tying your shoes every day. We know how to tie our shoes. And these officers out there are highly trained. Oakland County is highly trained. The local police department for situations just like this. And this is a great example of training, working together, having that dialogue with the other law enforcement agencies in the community and coming together. And this is the result of it. It's unfortunate, but this is the end result of all that training.
Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer also addressed the attack in a press conference this week. She stressed the importance of being vigilant about anti-Semitism, a form of hate that's been on the rise in recent years.
And I want to thank our state and local law enforcement, the first responders, our federal partners, for their swift work to keep people safe and to investigate. I want to thank Temple Israel's security personnel. They were selfless in their courage, and they saved lives. These heroes threw themselves in harm's way, engaging the suspect. And let's be very clear, yes, this is a place of worship, but at the time that this attack was occurred, it was a school. 104 children, age 5 and younger, here. So I want to thank all of Temple Israel's staff who acted quickly to evacuate students and reunite families. The state of Michigan will wrap our arms around this community and support our local and federal partners every step of the way to keep people safe. I want to share prayers from my colleague, Governor Shapiro of Pennsylvania. Josh called, reached out yesterday to check in and see how people were doing. I want Michigan's Jewish community to know that we are with you. Violence in our houses of worship and in our schools and in our daycare centers like this hits especially hard. Temple Israel is a pillar of the community. It's one of the largest Reformed Jewish congregations in North America, with Friday night Shabbat services attracting over 1,000 people. People celebrate bar and bat mitzvahs, weddings, and holidays here. Parents bring their children to daycare and school, and it's a place of peace, unity, light, and life. Yesterday's attack was anti-Semitism. It was hate, plain and simple. We will fight this ancient and rampant evil. We will stand together as we do it, and we will call it out. We must lower the rhetoric in this state and in this country, especially at this moment where we have seen such a rise in anti-Semitism and more attacks on the Jewish community. We must keep each other close. This community is on the edge, very understandably. We've seen a rise in attacks, especially over the last decade, especially over the last 10 months. And so it is important for us to stand up, to stand against it, and to thank the people who showed up to support the community, but also call out where we see acts of anti-Semitism, where we see threats, where we see something, how important it is to say something. And to recognize that each of us has a responsibility. People like the person that attacked this community yesterday get fomented by rhetoric that they see online and that they see on television and they hear on the radio. It radicalizes people and it endangers our fellow Michiganders. We cannot let this continue. And so each of us has a duty to take action where and how we can. And with that, I'll hand it over to Senator Slotkin.
Whitmer was referring to Democratic Senator Alyssa Slotkin, a former intelligence analyst.
Thank you, Governor. And just want to reiterate, I think it's clear that if it were not for the private security and the staff at Temple Israel, and then the first responders, first on the scene, local law enforcement, if they had not all done their jobs almost perfectly, we would be talking about an immense tragedy here today with children gone. This could have been much, much worse. So I give incredible credit to law enforcement and the people who were in the room putting themselves and their own families at risk. I think, you know, the governor said it very, very well on the way this community has responded. It's been incredible to watch neighbors in the community here, both organizations and just regular old citizens, open up their homes literally yesterday to help care for people who were fleeing from this. And this is a place that I have a very personal connection to. I feel I've spent a lot of my time growing up in and out of this temple, and I feel just an immense amount of pain, as does the rest of the community, that incidents like this even happen. And I think it's just important to be clear, as the governor said, that whether anti-Semitism is coming from the left or the right, whether it's coming from some group that you like or don't like, you have a responsibility to call it out. Because when you don't, it gives permission for people to climb that escalation, that ladder of escalation that goes from saying hateful things online to saying them in person to graffiti to ultimately violence. And the Jewish community suffers 10 times the number of hate crimes than any other community in this country. So it is an epidemic. And until we push back on that permission, we're going to see incidents like this continue to proliferate. The Jewish community spends over $1 billion across the country securing their houses of worship, their schools, their institutions. No community in America should be fearful of having their own kind congregate for things like education and worship. So I stand here proud of the community, but angry that we even are put in this position. Thankful to law enforcement, but asking the average citizen out there, if you have a friend, a colleague, coworkers who are using anti-Semitism in their daily life and feel like it's just normal, please call that out wherever you see it.
Whitmer also said the situation could have been much worse when taking questions from reporters.
When it comes to lowering the temperature, because we talk to each other, we work together, we build families amongst each other, what's the message you can deliver to help lower the temperature?
I think I'm trying to deliver that message right now, that we are Michiganders. This was a school. These are 0 to 5-year-olds that were targeted yesterday, 104. My friend Brian said this could have looked a lot more like Sandy Hook, right? Like, let's not lose sight of that. This is not a political moment. This is not a political debate. This is targeting babies who are Jewish. That's anti-Semitism at its absolute worst. And that's why we cannot lose sight of that, the importance of keeping everyone in Michigan safe by being responsible in how we talk about issues and how we treat one another.
Another hate-fueled crime, the Tops grocery store shooting in May 2022, resulted in then 18-year-old Peyton Gendron killing 10 black people and wounding others at the Buffalo, New York grocery store. An investigation into the tragedy revealed that Gendron wrote a self-described manifesto containing a detailed plan to shoot and kill black people at Tops. That's according to the U.S. Department of Justice. This case is still moving through the courts. Attorney John Elmore, who represents some of the families impacted by the mass shooting, joined a new morning out of Odyssey station WBEN this week to discuss the latest developments, including the decision to keep the trial in Buffalo.
John, your reaction to the decision to keep the trial here in Buffalo?
I'm not surprised at all. The Western District of New York, Federal District Court, where the case is being tried, covers 8 counties. There are people that are in the southern tier that weren't didn't see too much news and weren't actually affected by it. People in Cattaraugus County serve as jurors here all the time, Allegheny, Orleans County. So they're going to be able to get a fair juror of people who weren't prejudiced by the pretrial publicity. As far as African-Americans not being able to serve on the jury, that's an allegation that the defense has made in their motions to say that the jury will not be made up of a fair cross-section of Western New Yorkers. I think it's counterintuitive. Probably, no matter where the case was tried, it would be difficult to find an African-American that would be completely unbiased, and more than likely the defense would use their peremptory challenges to challenge African-Americans that did survive the initial jury questionnaire process and got questioned by the jurors. So I'm not surprised at all.
The argument that for victims' families to be able to attend every day, having to travel to Rochester or wherever else that might have been, did that, in your opinion, make a lot or weigh a lot on the judge's mind?
Absolutely. The judge had to balance the defendant's right to have a fair and impartial jury along with the victim's rights to attend the trial or the victim's family's rights to attend the trial. Now, one thing I can say is that there's going to be a process where the judge is going to receive a bunch of questionnaires from Western New Yorkers. The defense attorneys are going to review them. And if it looks like the defense is not going to have a fair and impartial jury based upon those questionnaires, they can renew this motion again. But the bottom line is, for all Western New Yorkers, is that it's important that this defendant receive a fair trial in front of an impartial jury, because you don't want to have the case tried again. You don't want to leave any reason for a higher court to overturn a verdict, whatever it may be, so that this case doesn't have to be tried a second time and the families have to relive the trauma and the community doesn't have to relive the collective trauma that they've experienced through this terrible tragedy.
Our last story today is an unusual one. In Georgia, a prank turned deadly earlier this month when 40-year-old teacher John Hughes was run over by a truck driven by one of his students. Here's Henry Lake of Odyssey Station WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities explaining what makes this case unique.
When grief shows up at your door with an unexpected accidental death, there are many ways that one can react. But knowing that you don't want to make a bad situation worse, that is the best way to go. We know that life happens. We oftentimes, when we're raised, we have this script, and your life does not go according to plan. And Laura Hughes, she defines what I'm talking about right now. She is a woman that's dealing with a tragedy, and I think that she's dealing with it the right way. So Laura Hughes is the wife and now widow of a high school teacher by the name of Jason Hughes. He was killed in a prank gone wrong. And Laura is asking for, and literally is begging for, charges to be dropped against the students that are involved in this prank. There were five teenagers that were arrested after her husband, Jason, was run over when he slipped and fell outside of his home in Gainesville, Georgia, while chasing them for covering his front yard in toilet paper as part of a prank war that had been a school tradition for years. Okay? And Laura says that her husband was in on it. In on it in the way that he wasn't trying to confront them as they're, you know, putting the toilet paper or throwing it all around or whatever, but he was excited and he was waiting to catch them in the act. Right? So this is high school tradition. He's anticipating it. So he's kind of in on it. He's having fun with it too. One of the teenagers, Jaden Wallace, 18, he's facing up to 15 years after police charged him with a vehicular homicide in the teacher's death. So what transpired is this. Mr. Hughes, he stepped outside. It's 11:40 on a Thursday night, walked over to the cars that Wallace and there were four other teenagers that were in the vehicle, and they were getting into fleeing after they, what's the phrase that they use? What are they called? I've never done it, where they throw the toilet paper all over the lawn.
Oh, you're just like toilet papering is all it's, that's all that I've heard.
I know that that's what they're doing. I thought that there was like a phrase. I never did that in high school.
Yeah.
All right. But what ended up happening was, as they're trying to exit and flee, Mr. Hughes fell into the road and he was run over by the pickup truck with the students in it. They stopped immediately. They provided first aid until emergency responders arrived, and the emergency responders transferred him to the hospital where he died from his injuries. 651-461-9226.
The Dave Glover Show out of Odyssey Station KMOX in St. Louis also discussed the case this week.
It's such a horrible story.
It's awful. So the widow of a Georgia teacher who was fatally run over by a student during a prank at his home is now asking prosecutors to back off of the students who killed her husband. So there were five teenagers who went to the teacher's house just before midnight to TP his house, And according to the wife of the man who lost his life, he was like in on the joke and he went outside to surprise them and pranked them back. But he ended up slipping on the wet ground. I guess he was running around trying to, like, you know, get around them and scare them. He fell into the street as the students got into their vehicles and struck and killed him. So they did try to provide life-saving measures on the scene. They weren't running from the situation. They obviously did not mean to hurt their teacher. It was, from all accounts, like a lighthearted, great relationship between the teacher and the students. Yeah. It went too far, and it was a terrible tragedy. Well, now the student who ran him over is charged with first-degree vehicular homicide, reckless driving, criminal trespass, and littering. And then the four other teens who were with him, they just face misdemeanor trespass and littering counts. The wife teaches at this same high school that they all go to and where her husband taught. And she's like, guys, we got to drop these charges. It's a terrible tragedy, but let's not also ruin the lives of these students. This kid could face up to 15 years in prison if he's convicted as charged.
So why would we play hardball on that?
That is such a good question.
When the person most impacted is flat out saying, look, it was just an accident. Like, it was literally, I mean, it's horrible. It's terrible. But it wasn't like they did anything intentionally that was harmful. I mean, you're TPing someone's house. It's not like you set a bag of, you know, dog crap on fire and the house burned down. That would be a little different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an innocent thing where in playing around with the prank, because he knew it was coming, the teacher ends up just slipping and falling. I don't get why you would ruin someone's life over that.
According to a Friday report from People magazine, District Attorney Lee Dara did indeed decide to drop charges against the teens. Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime in Real Time Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to the Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City, WWJ News Radio in Detroit, A New Morning out of WBEN in Buffalo, The Henry Lake Show out of WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities, and The Dave Glover Show out of KMOX in St. Louis. You can find and subscribe to these shows on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find these true crime updates by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brayton, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brayton wherever you get your podcasts.